You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen, low, great ball into the middle, what a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davinson Sanchez, Lucas Moura, and belted into the net, brilliant goal! On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it, oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! Absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First hand hit to Son. Kane. Good area for Spurs. And Kane's not afraid to shoot. Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane! That is exceptional! Lamella who will try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason. Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward. Oh wow, what a run! Yunmin Son from inside his own half has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs.
Good evening or good morning, depending on how you're watching or listening. We are New Spurs Order under the Touchline Fracker banner. I'll be your host, X-Pac, and I'll be joined by my co-host tonight, Kevin Nash. How you doing, my friend?
I am here. I almost didn't make it. I was watching the go up, but I'm here now.
You ended up cutting out on my stream just then as you mentioned what you were doing, so I hope you weren't up to some kind of sus behavior and then
that's a low blow
service we use just bleeping out whatever it was you were up to. But I can only assume you're watching All or Nothing and you were drinking in the last episode as well as the tears
on 100%
to go with it.
I made sure that I got the blood of my enemies in before the pod. So I'm energized.
Very, very. So obviously we're off the back of quite a frantic and tense game of the weekend against our rivals. Obviously, if you have been living under a rock, we've just come off the back of drawing 2-2 at the Bridge. Just go straight into it. How did you feel going into the game? Were you confident?
Oh, it's cutting out a little bit, but yeah, let's keep it rocking. Going into the game, Chelsea away, Stamford Bridge, we tend not to have good performances there. So I wouldn't say pessimistic, but I was very much going in with no expectations outside of just leave with something. Like, I don't care what the performance looks like aesthetically, just leave there with something and keep pushing on. And in a roundabout way, yeah, we did that.
And did you expect Conte to rock with the same lineup, or was there anyone in particular that you would have liked to see, maybe for a little tweak, not particularly, not essentially a tactic change? Because I didn't want to see that 4-4-2 with Doherty under or playing out wide again. But was there any little tweaks? Because, I mean, me personally, I was really tempted to kind of see Perisic in that starting lineup.
Yeah, I think if there was ever going to be somebody who was going to come in for someone else, it was going to be Perisic. But based on Sessegnon's performance in week one, I wasn't expecting any major changes. I was quite surprised by how much of the bench had changed, just based on the fact that we knew Richarlison was going to come in, but we didn't see Spence. We didn't see Longley. So it's one of those things. I think Conte has a habit of just sticking to what won the week before. He's not a tinker man in that sense. He tends to be quite consistent with his lineup. So I went into that game thinking it will be more of the same, but we'll throw on some of those new signings when the game gets inevitably a little bit rough.
Yeah, that's something that gave me confidence going into the game, to be fair. I mean, we only had to see what happened last time we played Chelsea and how our bench looked as well as our lineup when we played them last time. And I was confident going into it. I was kind of thinking to myself, if we were offered a draw, hypothetically at the end of the game, then I wouldn't take it. I wasn't expecting us to win, but I was quietly confident. I'm quite glad Conte went with Sessegnon in the end because of how the game played out and the overloads on that right-hand side. I think anything less than a 110% Perisic would have got absolutely ravaged. So obviously we'll get into it, and credit to Sess, he did quite well. But just setting that tone for that first half, Conte did go into the game unchanged, zero tweaks. Nothing wrong with a bit of Emerson Royale, right wing back. Nothing wrong. I mean, we've got the same midfield, and Tuchel decided that he would play Loftus-Cheek right wing back. I guess that's what it was on paper, but obviously his role ended up being a little bit different to that, more like an inverted winger. And then put in Reece James, right centre back. And what seemed to play out in the first half for me, quite clearly, Chelsea did quite well to suffocate us, especially in their counter press. Reece James kind of doing what Rob Holding was supposed to do in that North London derby at the end of last season, getting tight to Son every time he dropped and kind of just challenging him, but he actually did it to a more measured effect, you could say, even though you could say he was lucky not to receive a second caution. But yeah, that would have been a bit tedious for me. Yeah, fair play to Reece James. He'd done a good job over on that side. Credit to Cucurella and Mount as well. Didn't see too much of them on the ball, to be fair, maybe apart from a few kind of aimless crosses. But when it came to their pressing, they were really, truly very effective. And Kai Havertz as well, again, like, has some decisive moments, what could have been decisive moments in the box.
Indeed. But, yeah, I think...
Yeah.
I think Chelsea's setup and their fluidity does definitely disrupt Conte quite significantly. The build-up play for us was pretty atrocious in that first half. There was literally not more than three times over the course of that half where we strung passes together and got out of our half with any form of confidence. And I'd like to think that a large part of that is based on the fact that Tuchel's fundamental system is very fluid at the best of times anyway, but against a midfield two of Bentancur and Højbjerg, who aren't the most mobile, who aren't the most dynamic. And then when you when you factor in maybe a son who isn't the best at playing out of trouble, they were just able to set traps consistently on their right-hand side. They just found ways to disrupt. As you mentioned before, I almost called him Lubin Cheeks, but Ruben Ruben Loftus-Cheek managed to...
Why was he back in the first place? You just come out with those standard names.
He made up extra numbers in the midfield, and they were able to basically play four central players against Star 2, and it created a lot of problems for us. What I would have liked to see to combat that is, and this is one of the things that I've spoken about in the past, when we played Man City and when we played Liverpool last season, we saw that Kulusevski would almost drop into a midfield three, play on that right-hand side of the three, mm-hmm. and make up numbers in midfield so we could just screen from left to right instead of sending one man to aimlessly press by himself while the two wide men almost recess into a 5-4-1. And we did that over the whole course of the first half. So any time we recessed into a low block, Chelsea just popped us from the middle wing positions, dominated us from the half spaces, and put in a hell of a lot of crosses as well. And had they been a slightly lengthier team, they probably would have scored from a few of them, to be perfectly honest. So I did hope that Conte adjusted the shape a little bit. I know a lot has been said over the course of the off season, if you will, that we should be looking for another player that can play in the midfield three. But we've seen over the course of the time that Conte has had Kulusevski and Bentancur in the team that those guys can be quite flexible in terms of their roles. But we didn't really see any of that over the course of that first half, especially.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? And I almost forgot, like, we actually opened the first 5 minutes really well. Like, we actually managed to play Sun in twice in that first 5 minutes. And obviously, they did what they did to snuff us out. And usually, the player that drops into those kind of deeper positions is Harry Kane. Obviously, they were looking after him a bit. But there were times where either he just didn't decide to show for the ball, whether that be him within himself or being the instruction. The amount of times he just didn't drop deeper or actually let's just show for the ball was a little bit weird to me. And when he actually did receive the ball to actually hold it up, for whatever reason, his hold up play was just completely missing. It was just he was thrown off balance so easily, he would lose it quite easily. And it's quite obvious he's capable. But for whatever reason, yeah, he had a poor game.
It was really strange to see. It was quite strange to see that we took preference of trying to play out of the right hand side the majority of the time. So hitting Kulusevski and hoping that he could create something and sort of beat the press. When realistically what you want to do is have Kane dropped deep and Son run off the shoulder, but we didn't really see it after those first few minutes. And we know that they benefit from being really close to each other, but when you've got Son and Kulusevski playing as practically peripheral fullbacks, but tucking in quite narrow to sort of make up numbers in the midfield as well, you just get overrun. And we just kept getting peppered and pushed back. And there wasn't ever any respite. We couldn't really hit Kane with anything because we were taking preference out of the right-hand side. And then obviously we didn't really see much of Emerson or Sessegnon as any sort of pressure valves, if you will. So we just got pinned in all honesty. It was pretty dire watching, to be fair.
No pun intended?
No pun intended. He had a really good game, man. In fairness to him, like, They struggled a bit as a trio, I'd say, but I can't fault him.
No, that's fair enough. I wasn't even meaning to get onto him there, but it was just an interesting pun. It's usually one of those, like you say, like the wing backs usually offer us at least an outlet that for whatever reason, or what you alluded to, didn't really happen. And then some, like, we obviously get our numbers made up in midfield through underlapping centre backs as well. They couldn't really even break out of their kind of defensive line to even progress the ball to midfield in the first place. So credit to them, and obviously I think Bentancur and Højbjerg were off it as well. It kind of just goes to the point in, I guess, in that first half, how much, I guess, of that play was only us playing within ourselves, or how much of the ratio were Chelsea good? Because I like what they did on Mugger recently. They were kind of like a ratio as to whose fault it was. Was it 80% his, 20% theirs? And it's something I kind of want to throw into what our performance reflected on the weekend. Like, for you, how much of it was us kind of playing within ourselves, I guess, maybe not showing for the ball as much, maybe not making ourselves, not creating options off the ball, etc., etc.? Or what was the ratio of Chelsea being good for you?
I'd say more than any performance on the pitch, it was more of a tactical thing. I think Tuchel, 65%, had Conte's number, especially in that first half. And that ratio changed over the course of the game as we ebbed and flowed with changes and adaptations to the system. But yeah, I'd say Tuchel definitely outfoxes Conte from a tactical standpoint, and had he not had, as Tobes, Mr. Look at my arms, look at the veins in my arms, like to say, Shai Havertz, terrible, terrible, terrible finishing, which probably gave us the little bit of a respite that we needed to go on and snatch something from the game, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, no, that's fair. See where they got their goal, just to throw it back just a little bit. Yeah. It comes to a point where I feel like I actually agree with the ratio where you were saying. I was thinking, if anything, might be 60-40, but 65-35. Yeah, that's a fair ratio either way. And I sensed a lot of times where we actually, whenever we did actually get little times and little time and space just to actually play out, we'd take an extra touch, and then, you know, we'd get frustrated, and then we, as a result, committed quite a lot of fouls and invited more pressure on, and then subsequently they'd have more corners as well. Obviously at the end they got the goal from the corner, but upon watching the first half back, apart from that, Sebi Scott, I felt like we actually did defend the set pieces quite well.
We did. I think the first one was a bit of an anomaly. I was watching Tifo in real life, shout out to those guys, and they were speaking about the amount of outswinging corners and the way that a zonal marking structure works if you're looking to block at the near post versus the far post. And those things are interesting because we do overcommit for corners. We don't ever seem to be in control of them, and we do concede a lot from set pieces. So I don't know, man. Like, I know you guys in particular were really, really chuffed about us finally having a set piece coach, but we need a fucking defensive set piece coach, because this shit is becoming quite stressful. I don't think the same
at Stamford Bridge last season as well from Thiago Silva.
It's ridiculous. The worst thing is we do actually have a few players that are quite aerially dominant. We do have quite a few guys that can sort of stay with their markers and things like that. But I don't want to throw him under the bus, but since Romero has been in the team, you're like, dude, I need you to do more, my guy. Like, I think he's a fantastic player when the ball's in live play. But from set pieces, you're just like, dude, come on, man. You got to do more. You have to do more. You have to win a header occasionally from a corner.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. I was kind of thinking this when we conceded that goal at Burnley away. But with that defending of set pieces, I think it still could be a work in progress. I'm sure Gianni Vio knows how to set us up or how to ideally set us up to defend better from set pieces. But at the end of the day, I think he's only really been in for a few weeks.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, this team needs a few more weeks, evidently. But we got to saw tangibles of his work at the other end of the pitch at the end of the game. So I guess it at least
it levels out.
At least it managed to even out on this occasion. And I think it was from The Athletic that brought this out, and it shows that the average height of each team in the league, and I think we're by far the tallest team in the league now. I don't know how that happened, because I think Perisic, Longley, yeah, Basuma. I mean, are they any taller?
Basuma than... maybe.
What's Basuma? 6'1"
Probably about 6'6".
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. But yeah, it was an interesting one. I think by the time we made the adjustment with Richarlison in the second half,
Richarlison is quite tall as well. Yeah, sorry.
He is actually. We did look like we had somewhat figured out what they were trying to do, or at the very least mitigate against it. Obviously, Son was still playing quite narrow, and so was Kulusevski. So we've got to call it more of a 4-2-2-2, because ultimately it was not a traditional 4-4-2 by any means. We had nothing down wings.
I remember it being called a 4-2-4 before Conte joined Chelsea. But yeah, like you say, 2 10s by narrow. And would you say Richarlison offered us the pressure valve, which we kind
precisely. Of precisely. So I think what naturally happens when you have two men up top, especially in moments of play where your opposition is playing a back three, you have guys that can fill each channel, and you create a little bit of indecision amongst the centre back. And whichever one has a man occupying the other side. So what we saw is Kane was able to drop off, and Richarlison had the threat of running in behind. Kulusevski could sort of run the other channel, and then Son would be the free man in a lot of instances. So he could combine with Davis on the left-hand side if needed. Obviously, Emerson stays quite disciplined in those attacks. He tended to almost make like a similar to what we were doing with Jose, where we had the lopsided back four, where when one goes forward, the other one sort of makes a back three to provide a little bit more cover. We saw a little bit of that, which again mitigated against some of the threats from Chelsea. We always had somebody in between Cucurella and Sterling. But where the problems started to come in once we scored is the game became a bit more frantic, and they were able to just shift all the pressure onto our left-hand side and create a free man on the right, on their right-hand side, which is how they managed to get the second goal. As soon as we lost the ball, they were just right on us, had more players in defensive areas than we did, and just basically shift the ball from left to right really quickly, and the ball was in the back of the net. So I don't want to see us do that too many more times. I think there's a bit of risk to it. But to get back into the game, you understand why he did it. And it was one of the more proactive moves we've seen him make as Spurs manager, I'd say.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I was gonna ask you, so if we should give Conte credit for being more adaptable. At the time during the game, I was very critical of how Conte was kind of refusing to change and just tweak it. I wasn't expecting like an overhaul change in the structure, but maybe just a small change of personnel, especially in midfield. I fully expected Basuma to be the first sub, but you know, it raised eyebrows with, I guess, most, if not all Spurs fans when the first substitute was in fact Richarlison for Sessegnon, who, well, I wasn't playing that badly, but was just, I guess, a victim of what was going to be just a change of shape. And see, Richarlison coming on, not only he offering that pressure valve, managed to create space for Kane to go through on goal through what was actually a pretty good pass from Højbjerg, who was having a poor game, as Kane. Was Bentancur. Wow. And well, see, a lot is made of a lot of the pressure that Chelsea did put us under, but by and large, we probably had the same amount of clear-cut chances.
Yeah, to be fair, chance creation is never really an issue for us, especially when we're the away team or the team that has to sit off. We always manage to make breaks and create some opportunities. But yeah, I don't know how much I would sort of revel in that, like having the same amount of chances as Chelsea, having more on target, all of that stuff. If they were better up top, we would have got blown away in that game, if I'm being totally fair. But that's not how it works. So I'm happy. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, we can't perform like that again. Not against them especially.
Yeah, and that's fair. And when you were mentioning the second goal, and I remembered how critical I was of how little he did change at the time, I quickly realised that he was about to change the structure back to our wing-backs. Like, we literally had the subs that I was screaming for and everyone was screaming for on the touchline ready to come on as Reece James slotted it home to make it 2-1. So, I mean, I guess maybe he was a little bit unlucky with timing, but maybe could he have brought them on 5 minutes earlier?
Yeah, it's tough. If you could change anything, you would have shored up shop a little bit once we got back in the game. I think the dynamic of our squad is really interesting at the minute. I think Ben Davis might well be the first choice left centre back for the whole duration of the season, because that ability to switch to a back four and still have that sort of that comfort and ultimately that confidence from him. He seems like he's really enjoying his football, and he, by and large, hasn't really put a foot wrong. Like, I know I've been really critical of him over the years. I'm not a massive fan of him as a left back, but if you are changing shape in a game and you do have four certified attackers on the pitch, Ben Davis looping crosses from deep is not a bad weapon for you to utilize. Like, it can create havoc. We saw him put in a couple of crosses that sort of created a little bit more momentum for us, and ultimately he didn't really put a foot wrong as a left back during the game.
So blame him for the second goal?
No, I think we were all just sort of pulled over too far. I would actually say that the centre midfielders let us down there. I think Højbjerg looked like he wanted to get something out of Bentancur's back pocket, even though there's no pockets on football shorts. But they were literally holding hands and they were too far over. If you see the angle from like a reverse angle, you can basically see they just had like an offset box in front of or between, or, let me say, around our centre midfield, and they were just able to play around us. And ultimately, you need one of your centre midfielders to be aware of what's behind him.
Mm-hmm.
They were both just looking at the ball and sort of pretty stationary. So I saw, obviously, Romero and Dyer shifted far over to the right, and Ben Davis was pretty much on the penalty spot, which, again, from a defensive standpoint, as the guy who can see the most of the pitch, you pretty much have to just cover for whoever vacates the spot. So it was a bit unfortunate, but I'd say that the defense was let down by the centre midfield, which tends to be the case when you're overrun. So
I would actually agree with that. I wanted to just play devil's advocate a little bit, though, and just have to ask the question. But yeah, for me in future, I just want to see if we're going to go to this 4-4-2, 4-2-2, or this 4-2-4, whatever it is. I think Bissouma has to be there for the whole time. To be fair, I feel like out of the midfielders, Højbjerg had the slightly better game. But if we're going to that shape, I think it has to be him off for Bissouma, because Bentancur is a bit more mobile, a bit more disciplined, and he's better at covering big spaces than Højbjerg, and Bissouma excels in that too. So it just makes sense for me to have Bissouma as the linchpin to kind of spring those ideas and obviously help us get a foothold back in those kind of games. But yeah, it's definitely a learning curve for Conte as well, not just against Chelsea, but I think we're going to have a few ties in Europe, which are going to be quite a lot like that, especially away from home. So if we can adjust just that little bit quicker, then I think we'll be all right. But yeah, we're going to see. Obviously, them 2-1 at this point. We're moving now, I guess, into the closing stages of the game. Actually, firstly, with our equalising goal, not just to give prop to the person who equalised, we'll get onto that.
It was offside.
Should that goal have stood? Like, they actually have a point with their complaints about Anthony Taylor for that, because arguably fouled by Bentancur in the first place.
The foul claims, they need to give it a rest. He got the ball. And whether or not he got the man as well, it's like those go your way sometimes. Sometimes they don't. But there was a lot of ball movement. They even retrieved the ball. They got the ball back, and it was Jorginho fumbling about trying to do Cruyff turns and shit to fucking get out of trouble in their own penalty box. That led.
I'm hearing there's a big fallout from that still, but yeah,
so there should be. But yeah. In terms of the offside, my memory is not good, but there was an incident like that last season, which didn't go our way. So it is what it is. Who cares? Like, they always say,
Thiago Silva pushing over Kane. And Kane spotted it, but basically Kane had a hand on Thiago Silva. He felt the hand, like there Kane was that one made an action to push him. I thought that was the incident you were on about, but yeah.
There was another moment last year. I can't remember actually whether or not it went in our favor or to the opposition, but that offside blocking the keeper's view thing, I don't think they're being as strict on that as they previously were.
Yeah, I think they changed the legislation on that last season, but I can't remember exactly when and what they said, but...
But yeah, I'll run it back and maybe we tweet about it afterwards just to make it look like we actually know what the fuck we're talking about. But, it's a tough one. Unless you have a camera right behind the goalkeeper and you're mapping what his eyes can see, who can say? The bit that was a bit dubious is the fact that the ball did run quite close to Richarlison. So had he got a touch on it, then it would have been called off. So...
Richarlison made an action towards the ball as well, didn't he? Like a small action towards the ball. So
it seemed like he was trying to get out of the flight, out of the way of the path of the ball, but ended up moving towards it because the defender had lunged. So he's sort of like just made a movement and then it went in the back of the net. But I don't even think Mendy was really complaining about that. I think he just got pissed that no one closed down the shot. So, yeah, it is what it is, though, man. Fuck those guys. Fuck Anthony Taylor, even though he helped us. Fuck all of these reps, man. None of these guys know what they're doing. So it makes for entertainment, doesn't it?
Exactly. And that move into the corner where we subsequently... Well, just before we scored, there was a corner before where Romero decided to give Cucurella some... treatment. And I guess it was revenge, if anything. We obviously later saw it resurfaced. And if it's true about what you say about contentious incidents in previous games, as well as that Thiago Silva and Kane goal, which got disallowed, if anything, now we're definitely level, if not still indebted to another decision going our way. But Romero on Cucurella.
Oh, that was fantastic. He's checking if his hair was real. That's all it was.
He said he was into it.
Yeah. It's Cucurella.
He knew what he was getting himself into when he stomped on that guy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all's fair in love and love. Oh, gosh. Don't have such long hair on a football pitch. It's that simple, man. Tie it up as
well. It is that simple. Mike Dean got nose to nose with him and just said, look, the game is the game.
Exactly.
You're in it now. That's it.
It's so funny though, man. Like imagine if he did get sent off for that, the fallout would have been immense. Like, oh man. But again, We come out, it's squeaky clean. And I'm all for it, man. I love a shithouse. I love a shithouse. I love it when we can be the bad guys and there actually be justifiable cause. Because as far as I'm concerned, Son gets a rep, Kane gets a rep, all of these guys get reps for literally just playing the game. And it's like, come on, guys. You had Diego Costa.
Yeah, why are we not allowed to be shithouses, by the way? No one gave them this squeaky clean reputation apart from you yourselves. Like, rival fans would give people these squeaky clean reputations, and then when something bad happens, it's like, oh, but I've heard he had the squeaky clean reputation. But it's like, you all set the precedent for that. Like,
precisely. They've been calling us soft for years. They've been saying we have a soft underbelly, all of this shit. And shout out to Eric Dyer, I'll never forget. I hear what they say about Tottenham and I don't like it. Still rings true. Like, these guys have to be nasty. They have to have that little dark edge to them in order to ensure that, like, we finish games off. Like, you got to show that passion and that desire. Again, shout out to Tobes. look at the veins in my heart. but yeah, it's one of those things. I think I'm all for it. Obviously, you're gonna get some occasions where it backfires, but the game is a game. The game is a game, and that's why you build a squad. So when Richarlison or Romero inevitably get red cards or suspensions and whatnot, next man up. And that's all we need. That's all we need. As long as we mitigate against it, I'm fine.
There we go. There we go. And obviously, going now to the equalising goal itself. Interesting set pieces. Obviously, starting with Perisic taking it with his weaker foot. I'll say that with little quote.
He took one there. Earlier in the game with his right foot as well, didn't he? So
yes, he did. Like, yes, he did.
And Son took an early free kick with his left.
He did. That was in the second minute. I don't think it went very well, to be fair, but it's interesting. This is what we're practicing. If you're ambidextrous and the angle favors your weaker foot, just try it, because ideally, you have as strong of a weak foot as you do a strong foot. So I got distracted by a comment that came in. I'm not even going to put it on there, but you're a nasty man.
I want to tell him something, but I'm being polite today, so
yeah, the acronym might be SYM, but that's neither here or there. But the set piece, so the one before the one we scored, was essentially a carbon copy of how we set up. We ended up having like this kind of circle or triangle of like 3 or 4 players in this one zone.
It's a very distinctly different shape, by the way.
Is it really?
There's like a very distinctly kind of different shapes.
Same amount of people in the same zone at the front post for what I saw.
Yeah.
As for like the rest.
No, I mean, a triangle and a circle are very different. One has sides and one is.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I feel like there was 4 people attacking the ball on the first one, which didn't quite come off. And then it was 3 on the one we actually scored. It was so
100%. They sort of all make pretty identical runs, and it's basically whoever touches it. And then Richarlison was sort of drifting off just in case a knock on came, but not quite far enough for it to be really, really obvious, but you could see that he drifted off just a little bit. But he's a nasty man. He tried to claim the goal, it looked like.
Richarlison, of all people, trying to claim the goal of Kane.
Yes.
That's fucking brave. Because, how was
I swear on my daughter's life. I swear.
You're a nasty man. I thought Richarlison had scored at first. I think Tobes thought Richarlison had scored it at first while watching it live.
Rishi lad.
the blonde little tips of Reece James that got like a faint touch on it. Yeah. I don't know why Richarlison. I can't tell if he was trying to claim it or he was just gassed that we'd scored.
Maybe.
Practically the last touch of the game. But yeah, Harry Kane managed to get up. I think he was pretty much leaping on Ben Davis to just get a little bit more leverage, and he just flipped it in. And he said after the game as well, it's like, I just wanted to get a touch on it. I didn't even think it was going towards goal. But I think even without that Reece James touch, it goes like at worst inside of the post and in. If not the side netting. So I guess with those set piece routines be encouraging to you as you going forward.
100%. I think especially in a period of slowness for Son and Kane, I think these are going to be vital for them to bail us out in some instances. Kane was awful. Absolutely terrible. Son was even worse. And two for two for your two best players is not great. So they need to bounce back for the next game. But over the course of that game, they were particularly poor. And Kane made up for it for getting the equaliser. But he needs to do more. He needs to figure out ways to be effective outside of pinging glory balls 40 yards every time he picks up the ball. He has to be more ingrained into the actual style of play and not just look to be the Bruno Fernandes of every situation. Because it is genuinely hindering our game as well. I don't think we played particularly well in the first game, but I can't really remember too many moments where Kane looked himself. And especially after such a good preseason and after a good end to the season, you do expect more from him.
I think we saw a lot of this towards the end of last season, to be fair, where I guess people were seeing more of his passing ability. And I guess it's more neutral fans. I think Spurs fans have known about it for a good few years now, even before Mourinho, to be honest. And then everyone's hyped, like, oh my God, he's as good as De Bruyne or a passer, if not better. And all these neutral fans are chiming into it. Obviously, he's seeing that and then becomes what's known now as the Bruno Fernandes effect, the Bruno Hollywood Fernandes effect. And you see it, like every time he picks it up now, he looks for that kind of 40, 50-yard pass to Son. Yeah. Even against Southampton as well, we had a situation where Kane dropped. He managed to hold it up well, to his credit. His hold-up play was much better against Southampton, but again, felt like he's on the ball. Work was lacking, and he had an easy ball to release Kulusevski, who was like 10 yards away from him, to set us away, and then he could have broke into the box and been another option to set up either him or Son. And he decided to try and hit it to Son, underhit the pass, and lo and behold, we've turned over what was a good opening. Yeah, he needs to be more efficient, but again, it's hard to tell what Conte's instructions are to him, because he's getting, then he's following it, then just execute that.
I mean, when you're a world-class player or supposedly so, or whatever people want to say about Kane at the minute, just being an intelligent footballer, you know that if you're struggling over the course of a game and if your touch is off, keep it simple. Keep it simple. Combine with players and build a little bit of rhythm and create some movement for your teammates at the very least. And playing those Hollywood balls when you're like 15 yards away from the 18-yard box, it doesn't really make too much sense. Switching the play wide when you have options down the center to combine with and get your ass in the box, it doesn't really make all that much sense, especially when you've got someone like Emerson who isn't really going to pick anyone out on that wide, in those wide areas. It sometimes slows our game down to the point where the opposition can predict what Kane is going to do, and then they can just recess into their shape and basically just nullify the whole attack. And that's been happening a bit too frequently over these first two games. So I do want to see a discernible improvement in his overall play over the next few games, especially.
I agree. Especially as he did look really sharp in preseason as well, and he's on the ball.
Looks amazing.
Looks razor sharp, to be honest. So I don't know if he's just peaked a little bit too early for his fitness or match fitness. Or it's just the August curse again.
Yeah.
It's a weird one with him. Maybe he's just kind of getting too involved with the fan energy and he wants to be on those back pages again, whereas I guess in preseason.
He's got an entanglement in August.
Well done. You've just came up with the pod name.
Terrible. Terrible.
Oh, my God.
Moving on.
We will. So transfer rumors, pun intended, by the way, transfer rumors. Well, we've actually had a few confirmed, bits of news. Lo Celso's joined Villarreal with the loan. No option to buy.
Who cares, man? Just get him away.
This is what I mean with, that Lo Celso and Ndombele debate on our account, as well as a few others. Which made it afterwards. It was like, okay, who's been a bigger flop, Lo Celso or Ndombele? It's weird when you, if you ever ask a fan why has Conte ostracized Lo Celso, there's very little answer back, because for one part of it, I can kind of see why Conte would kind of see Ndombele as not part of his plans, purely just because of that petulance in that cup game where he walked off the pitch slowly while we were losing. I understand that to a point. I would have still given him somewhat of a pathway back into the team, but who knows. But as Lo Celso, to my knowledge, hasn't shown any signs of petulance. He's apparently quite passionate and works hard, but he's just on the pitch. Performances have just been underwhelming. Him.
That guy has hoodwinked a lot of people. I think I've never been a fan of like players' performances being tied directly to their fee, because we've seen over the last few years, especially, you pay what it takes to get the player. And in the lead up to Tongi joining us, everybody wanted him. Many a person never saw him play. They may have seen like one Champions League game or two at a stretch, but people weren't actually in tune with what type of player he is or what he does well or what he would bring to the team. There was a lot of chat about him being the Moussa Dembele replacement. And a large part of that was based on the fact that their names look similar on paper. Outside of that, they're not the same type of player. They fundamentally have different approaches to do the same thing a lot of the time, but one player is distinctively more attacking than the other. And ultimately, when that is the case, you don't play them in a double pivot. You don't play them in situations where they're going to be caught on the ball. You look to get them higher up the pitch, ultimately. And when it comes to Lo Celso got brought in on loan, and then we ended up paying exorbitant fees to keep him. And people just seem to ignore that. And it's like, on the balance, they probably cost around the same amount. So it's like, yo, they were both underwhelming, but one of them is clearly and more distinctively talented than the other. One actually has some form of football IQ. One has actually contributed to results, and one has not scored with a shin pad in a one-on-one. So fucking hell, like, just let it go. Just let it go. Lo Celso was fucking awful. He was awful.
Yeah, he was. He was. And it was weird because of how he started. In that lockdown period, he was good. But then caveat that with having no pressure from fans in the stadium. Because, I mean, I guess when you saw fans in the stadium again, you just saw him lose his head constantly, meaning Lo Celso. And it affected his decision. Well, we saw the true nature of his decision-making once fans came back as well, so... I was about to say it exposed it, but it just showed what was already there. A shame. Obviously, Ndombele today got confirmed to Napoli with a loan, with the option to buy for 30 million euros. But I'm buzzing for Tongi. I think that's a really good move for him.
Yeah, he's got to make the most of this one, man. Like, I wish him well. Ultimately, he came into a situation that was quite volatile. Like, there's a lot of revisionism about how many managers preferenced him or whatnot, but ultimately he was a Pochettino signing, and we were clearly moving towards a different type of system, and ultimately Pochettino didn't have the best of time going into that season. So you end up with Mourinho, who basically put a target on his back from the offset, and then also went down the route of saying, oh, and I'm also taking time out of my quarantine to train this guy in the park. Like, you're not recovering from that. Like, the same sort of stigma that's been attached to Paul Pogba, who, for all intents and purposes, would have still been the best player on the pitch for Manchester United over the last two games. Like, it's the same energy. And you obviously can't just blame the manager. There are contributing factors from Tongi. He didn't cast himself in any glory in terms of his demeanour towards the end or whatnot, or his tracking back for tackles and all of this shit that we romanticise in this league. But it is what it is. I want him to be successful. I want to see the black boy joy, if I'm honest. So yeah, best of luck to him. And if we get 30 mil out of the, 58 back, then fuck it. It was worth it.
Or Napoli are too poor to pay for him and he comes back with an extra boost and a pathway into the team. I don't think it's realistic.
This time next year, he'll be in Newcastle or Villa. Those will be the only teams that have the money to buy him.
He's torn it up at St. James's Park before, so yeah, why not?
Yeah.
But no, it's interesting. Napoli are building actually quite a good side. They're already in the Champions League. Serie A seems quite open at the moment. I'm going to probably try and catch some games. They've signed the notorious Kim Manjay. Obviously, a winger who's... a Georgian winger whose name I don't wish to botch. Giovanni Simeone, who's been killing it at Verona. And there was someone else they signed as well. But by all means, they could end up being on a kind of small title charge over there. But who knows?
That league is very unpredictable, man. Fuck knows what's going to happen in that league.
If Ndombele does, if he shows what he can do, well, what we know he can do in that Napoli team with Fabio Ruiz looking like he's leaving as well, then boy, like he'll be one of the standout midfielders in Serie A at least. And that seems to get quite a lot of good attention. Serie A is a way more competitive league than it has been in the last 5 years or so. But yeah, I'm buzzing to see how he gets on. Let's see, other rumours today. Manchester United have just confirmed the signing of Casemiro, which now leads to other rumours with Real Madrid being interested in one of our players. Allegedly reported by the Telegraph as well. It's not a silly tier, not a silly source. And they're saying that Real Madrid are interested in... Pierre-Emile Højbjerg.
We're living in a bizarro land. We're in the Inside Out or something. It's fucking hell. Stranger things are happening.
Mate. What are your thoughts on that, other than that being pretty strange?
If Højbjerg has on his CV that he's played for Bayern and Real Madrid, I can just imagine him walking around like Tobes going, look at the tats on my arms, everyone. Like, fucking hell. It is a bizarre signing. In all honesty, though, I don't think we should be selling him at this moment in the window. I don't see how that benefits us. If we get 40-plus million for him, 60, you let him go, but... Again, it's slim pickings in terms of players that are going to be able to come in and immediately contribute. We then have to shift the dynamic of the midfield that we've started the season with, which isn't too much of a big deal, providing Skip is fit over the next couple of weeks. But again, you're now embedding another midfielder into the team. The name Neves has been floated around. It would work. It would be a pretty seamless adjustment for him, having played in similar systems. But at the same time, you would hope that if you have 60 million for a player who isn't necessarily the best player in the team, that you'll be able to reinvest it for somebody who is of significantly better quality. And I don't know, I don't know if that deal presents itself in the next few weeks, if I'm perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean, how long is it until the transfer window shuts? End of this month? Yeah, it could be hard to not only find, I guess we could probably find someone who's at least fairly similar with the system. There's even small rumours of us showing interest in Casado at Brighton. Ruben Neves is fairly familiar with a similar structure. There's Brozovic, who might be plausible. I haven't heard that one come up in a while, but I think he's a bit better technically than Hoybier. Albeit it would be hard, arguably, to replace his leadership within the squad.
Oh, for fuck.
Either here or there. Nico Barella, he seems a bit expensive. But no, that's to aid your argument. I think that's pretty much what you were alluding to. No, it'd be hard to replace that kind of presence in the squad. Would that be fair to say?
I'd say more so than presence, because you're definitely trying to be smarmy and put words in my mouth there, which I don't appreciate.
I knew you'd clock me doing it as well.
Nasty, nasty. No, I would say the fact of the matter is Conte has entrusted Hoybier with significant minutes. So ultimately, you're taking a first team player and you're looking to replace them. That's always difficult. We've seen those innocuous sort of transfers occur over the years. Guys like Trippier, you sell him, everyone celebrates, and then a year later, everyone's like, oh shit, we didn't actually replace him. We've just lost him, reinvested the money into another area of the squad, but now we've got one senior right back and one junior. Now we've got to go back to market for another one. I can see the same occurring with Hoybier, where we end up with three senior center midfielders going into a season that is very, very important for us. We're forced into playing Winks, or we're forced into playing Saar, and then people bitch and moan for the rest of the season about how we haven't replaced the guy who nobody really fucks with anyway, other than Tobes. So I would prefer us not to be in that situation. The lesser of two evils is keep him, unless we're presented with an opportunity to considerably upgrade that position. And I don't want to hear any more Maddison shouts because he's not playing in a two-man midfield. People, please. We saw what happened with Eriksen. We saw what happened with Eriksen.
Did we? Or was that was that a troll football account on Twitter that saw what happened to Eriksen? Oh, I don't know who to give the credit to. I'm so confused. But no, it was interesting. The reaction on the TL was obviously, like, I'm under no illusion that Hoybier is he is upgradable, even though I do fuck with him. I do have a slight soft spot for his debatable leadership skills within the squad. Like, some would say, might say he's a good communicator, some might not.
He's a really good traffic conductor, that's it, man. And you probably worked with Hoybier. He's one of those guys on the runway that has them little sticks.
Oh, my God, that's... I would like that. Whenever I describe what I actually do, people think like that's what I do, but no. I wish I'd just take my lightsabers in every day.
Pause.
Can be necessary. A lot of people responded with the Hoybier news, like, oh, we can upgrade him with Maddison or Zaniolo or Milinkovic-Savage. I'm just like, bro, none of these are pivots in Conte's
structure. What is this obsession with people in Milinkovic-Savage?
He's really, really good. I'd liken him to, if I was to compare his play style to someone similar, I'd probably say Paul Pogba. Not to say he's as good as, but on that kind of level of, okay, maybe off the ball, he's not as good or as disciplined as you would like, but technically, like, in the opposition half, in the final third, he's very, very gifted, very effective.
At some point, we're going to have to accept the fact that Conte likes a functional midfield. Like,
yeah.
Like, at some point, anyone that's watching this, please just accept it.
everyone wants him to play, or shoehorn him to this 3-5-2.
And then Kulusevski doesn't play, and then everyone says, why isn't Kulusevski playing anymore?
Oh, no, he could still play, just maybe a different position.
Right wing back, yeah.
Maybe.
Shout out to Lucas Moura as well, man.
Fuck him. As much as people will push back on the idea of Kulusevski deputising at right wing back, there's no one that can tell me he would be a better option than Lucas Moura.
I think Lucas Moura is a better option.
I think although I will say he did do well against Chelsea in the minutes that he got.
That's what I'm saying. That's going to be his position. We'll end the season with Lucas Moura at right wing back.
He's not good or intelligent enough to play there. So I hope it doesn't play out like that. And I hope you're right.
Literally just need to run to the byline and cut the ball back.
That's and how good has he been at that in the past? We've been screaming. That's what he has to do in this forward line for years. And yet he's still...
To be honest, in the forward line, he was being asked to play narrow. He was being asked to play as like a quote-unquote attacking midfielder. And that's not his game. He was playing way too infield. Whereas towards the end of last season, albeit he didn't stretch all the way to the touchline, he was actually driving byline and just cutting it back. That is literally how he finished the season. And a lot of it was on the underlap as opposed to the overlap. But I think it's transferable. If you have Kulusevski on that side and how him and Emerson have been combining, and I know we're going off on a tangent here, but you could see Lucas Moura on the end of a Kulusevski through ball and getting Kane to actually commit to the front post. I could see that happening over the course of the season.
I hope you're right.
I hope so too. Because Sy Stradamus needs to come back.
And I've got a trust Conte on this because obviously he knows more about ball than me, but I just don't see it with him.
Converted lesser players, man. Well, debatable, but...
Actually, yeah, I mean, I don't know, right wing back. I mean, I can't remember what Victor Moses was like before Conte converted him, but...
He wasn't good.
He wasn't. This is what I've heard, but EMP. Yeah. That's not for me to say.
Speaking of that, are we going to get into the...
There was an incident after the Chelsea game, which was... good segue, to be fair. Firstly, I think it was like, it might have even been the day before a game against Chelsea or on the Friday before. The Premier League or the captains of the Premier League clubs all kind of decided that we're probably going to stop taking the knee as a sign against racial prejudice before games. And lo and behold, a day or two later, we play against Chelsea, and I don't want to generalise Chelsea fans, but I mean, I don't know why it keeps on happening at Stamford Bridge. And I think it might have even been the same corner of the ground where Sterling got abused, but I'm not sure. But yeah, someone made a gesture at him and Son, which was racially insensitive, and it offers up in interesting timing.
Yeah, I think the whole taking a knee situation is just indicative of how these things are treated widely within society. It becomes quite tokenistic. I quite enjoyed the fact that they kept it up for as long as they did because it added a bit of weight to the situation, albeit they all live mattered the thing by making it about all discrimination, even though it was initially signaling solidarity with the George Floyd situation during the pandemic. So it's like, there was already a little bit of a nasty undertone. Obviously we've got 30 years of the Premier League. They're celebrating this. And what they're saying is only in significant moments, we're going to take the knee. How do you decide what a significant enough moment is to show solidarity with either underrepresented or oppressed groups? Like, all moments are good moments to do that in my book. But again, some will call me a social justice, right? Shout out to you. You know who you are. But yeah, for me, it's no surprise that like you have 30 years of the Premier League, 29 years of Kick It Out. You have decisions made at the start of a season to basically just, oh, let's forget about that. I think the time has passed. And then immediately you just get faced with the same bullshit. This league needs to do a better job across the board. That means whether you're Chelsea, whether you're West Ham, whether you're Leeds, whether you're Spurs, I don't give a fuck what fan you are. If you're racist, you deserve a lifetime ban. I don't want to see you. We don't want to see you. SYM, all of that. And the energy will be consistent no matter who it is. I don't want to see anyone on the timeline saying, oh, but when your fans did this and that. No, we called that out too. And if you don't know, the whole pod is centered around not fitting into that bullshit anymore. I don't fuck with it. And the league and clubs need to do a better job of kicking that shit out of the game. And ultimately, society needs to do a better job of weeding those people out of society too.
Exactly. And honestly, I say that as well. I remember seeing that come up on the account to say, like, oh, you're only saying this because it was a rival fan. It's like, no, if it was one of our fans or our players even, I think the energy would be the same, if not stronger.
It would be stronger.
It would be stronger. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's obviously people who might be unfamiliar with the platform. And yeah, like, we're not one of those accounts on football Twitter that spite these kind of things just for the sake of getting that arrival. Because really and truly, again, like, if it was one of our lot, if it was one of our fans, players with a case, then the energy would be stronger. So yeah, that's the energy. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next coming weeks, especially with Chelsea's internal investigation, which they have announced now that they are looking into that incident. So yeah, hopefully that fan is identified and he does get the lifetime ban coming to him. And yeah, I'll be looking out for that that news soon. Hello to Acer as well, who's watching in.
Honorary NSO. Exactly. We gotta get him a name. He deserves one.
He can bring his own one from the NWO. Or he could just be Landon Donovan's son. I don't know.
Lando. Oh, jeez.
I know, coming in. He'll obviously be on the pod again soon, no doubt. Shout outs to Acer. We'll see before we get into there we go. Don't think anyone else has heard that yet. Dennis Rodman.
I think you might have to change your name after the ice cream incident, because
that doesn't leave.
It doesn't.
I was having a different kind of magnum and absolutely rumbled. Well, there you go. Club legend Clint Dempsey.
Oh, good. Jeez. We should probably do Wolves before we chip out and spend time with our families.
Of course. I mean, I guess before we preview Wolves, I guess just wanted to touch upon this very quickly. Apparently, there was talk of Todd Bowley joining Saudi Arabian project or the group to take over Spurs before Newcastle. What are your, like, just quick thoughts on?
I wouldn't mind having Saudis because it increases the chance of us getting a prayer room at White Hart Lane. Other than that, I'm not for it, mate. I'm pretty happy with Levy at present. I think we're trending upwards, and the way that the stadium is going and things, providing we get naming rights and some of these sponsorship deals sorted out, then I think we'll be in a good position to get a better bid down the line. But yeah.
Just crazy. I don't even want the Super League anymore. Because we're probably one of the only teams in Europe that can self-sustain profit and good income in this current market. And like you say, like, it's easy to forget that, like, we actually haven't even got naming rights for a stadium yet, which generates obviously a whole lot of income for us. But 100%. Obviously tying down the boxing, the NFL, the concerts, potentially there's a hockey event coming to a stadium soon. Wow. so Skywall, all these little things, as well as having them probably the most expensive tickets in the league.
Not one
of the highest. Especially, obviously not particularly a concern for you, but the beer is apparently really pricey there as well. Just all of these things manage us to be probably one of the best self-sustained clubs in Europe. And all these other clubs, especially ones which exercise levers on their TV rights, are desperate for it. And I don't want to see clubs like that saved because they essentially they haven't earned it, whereas we've suffered and we deserve some self-sustained profit. And hopefully we can go into this kind of post-COVID climate as strong as we have been. So that's my initial thoughts on that. I don't think we need a takeover money-wise anyway.
Not yet anyway. It has to be the right one.
Exactly, exactly. And if Man United are worth $4 billion, I mean...
Yeah. Their decrepit stadium and all of that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ace is saying Jewish-Muslim relations could be promoted by a prayer room for afternoon prayer times and a halal kosher food stand. Do we not have one of those food stands in the stadium?
It's a travesty, mate.
Actually quite surprising.
Yeah, I asked one time and they looked at me like I didn't belong. So, yeah. That's it's been happening a lot recently.
But no, yeah. For sure. That's a great show. No, let's preview the Wolves game then. Just a slight injury concern. So Romero was reportedly injured for 3 to 4 weeks. That's been quashed to say, you know, he's more got like an impact injury from Cucurella's challenge, and it should be a formality. He misses one game. That's probably going to be it. Up to about 10 days. So with him, obviously, not starting against Wolves, he's been ruled out of this. How do you see this Wolves game going? And
I think we can cope for a game. Like, if we can't cope for a game, then there needs to be some real shuffling in that back line. I'm pretty certain that will just be Sanchez slotting in. He did okay last season when he came in for Romero. We amassed quite a good run, albeit with him not looking the greatest in build up and things. But it is what it is. You have a squad for a reason. Use it. I do expect to see Perisic start, and I wouldn't be surprised to see. I want to see Bissouma as well. I can't lie.
In place of
even one of these bums, man. No, I'm joking. Bentancur is not a bum. I would like to see him start over Højbjerg for this game. I can't lie. Especially if you don't have Romero on that side to break lines, then I think you do need someone a bit more expansive in the midfield, especially on the side where we're being vacated by Romero. So to get the ball into Kane, to get the ball into Kulusevski with more of a frequency, I do think you need to have something a bit more adventurous in the midfield. But we're unlikely to make three changes, so the definites are going to be Perisic and Sanchez coming to that side.
Cool. So we're going for technical quality and expansiveness, so for relative leadership. Okay. No, okay. I hear it. I think that wouldn't be the worst move. Obviously, Bissouma genuinely is a better midfielder, so yeah, it could be a good chance for him to feel like a starter for the team. Perisic coming in seems like a formality as well. Coming in, I think we should be able to keep them out even without Romero. Like, I saw the meltdown on the timeline and remembered, obviously, coming into the running last season. Sanchez isn't ideal, and I would have looked to have sold him this summer, but at the same time, he provides decent cover. To my pleasant surprise, last season he showed good cover, and again, I'm sure against Wolves, who don't look that threatening going forward, aside from Pedro Neto's kind of Hollywood runs. Yeah, they don't look great going forward. And I see us running out 2-0 as Harry Kane likes to get the odd goal against them as well. But a quick score prediction from yourself, I guess.
I want to say, I would like to see us get a clean sheet. 3-0.
3-0. Are you going to the game?
I am. I don't know how the fuck I'm getting there with the tube strikes and stuff. Shout out to TFL and National Rail and all of you guys unionizing and things like that. You won't slow me down and I still show solidarity with you, but fucking hell, man. 10 o'clock, I'm going to have to leave the house because, it's an early kickoff.
Oh, yeah, goddamn. So there you go. And Ace has chipped in with a 3-1 win because he's convinced Sanchez will do something a bit silly. So I was going to say Tanganga initially. Luckily, I guess at right centre back, we've got like a slightly more relative quality in depth than I suppose other centre back positions. Like left centre back doesn't really, we haven't really seen Lonle tested yet.
I think he's going to be superb. I can't lie. I think he's going to really surprise everyone. Oh, geez. You do not need to be that good defensively playing in this back three. You do not. You don't. Especially if Dyer and Romero are on good form. Like, it's a formality. Just ping that ball about. That's it. That might come to haunt me, but yeah, I think he'll do well.
I've got a good feeling on him, but I'm slightly apprehensive because we don't have the buy option on him. And we're just fattening up a cap for someone else to swoop in. And if he does well for Spurs this season, like his value goes up astronomically. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we bought him this summer, just outright bought him, like he probably would have cost like what at most? About given 17. That bottom. No more than like 15 million, give or take. Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think if he does well for us, that will at least double, triple. So, yeah, let's hope Barcelona are still starving for money by the time we look to maybe purchase him. Don't know how I ended up on a kind of long lay vision there, but that kind of wraps up the Wolves prediction and the podcast this evening. Shout-outs to Ace jumping in and providing a nice little future there. You are now dubbed the Dennis Rodman of the pod. As for the rest, we'll see you soon. Catch us on the streams every Thursday or Friday. We decided the audio form comes out on the Saturday. The live show is now sold out, so if you didn't get a ticket, shame on you. But yeah, as for now, come on you Spurs, and
look at the veins in my
Oh yeah, thanks for the point, Chelsea.
We need to clip that into our intro from now on as well. That shit was amazing.
That can be done.
Let's do it. All right, peace.
Peace.
On debut, Tunge Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. A great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier!
Sports Social Podcast Network.